I'm Brian Ellison, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The superintendent of Kansas City Public Schools is facing a big challenge, leading the district to full accreditation and beyond. Today we speak with Mark Bedell about his first 6 months on the job. He's listened, he's watched, and now he has a plan. We'll find out how he intends to improve grades, raise graduation rates, and take Kansas City classrooms into the 21st century. Then, a conversation with music legend Ramsey Lewis, a mainstay of the Chicago jazz scene. He'll tell us about his 60-plus years in the music biz and how he's using his piano to commemorate the life of Martin Luther King Jr. at 18th and Vine this weekend. Speaking of the weekend, Brian McTavish brings us the weekend to-do list. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. It's only been half a year since Mark Bedell became superintendent of the Kansas City Public Schools, but a lot has happened in the sometimes troubled school district in that time. Last fall, the State Board of Education said the district had finally reached the scores needed for full accreditation, and although that status hasn't yet been granted, the new super, who moved his family here from Baltimore and his kids into the schools that he oversees, has now completed a 100-day period of listening and learning and making plans. Here to talk about that and about how those first 6 months have gone is Superintendent Mark Bedell. Dr. Bedell, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Brian, and thank you again for having me.
We're glad you're back. So before we talk about that 100-day report that came out just before the holidays, I want to start with accreditation news this week, and actually news from around the state, because the St. Louis School District was granted full accreditation on Tuesday by the State School Board. What was your reaction to that news?
Oh, I was pretty happy. It wasn't just the fact that they received a full accreditation. I know that they were in a pretty deep hole at one point. What makes me excited about that news was the support that Superintendent Kelvin Adams had from the community, the support from his board, the support from the state. And when you have all of those components working in your favor, it gives you an opportunity to come into a school system that's troubled, to do some unique things, to do some things that are different and innovative and outside of the box, that then will allow for the school system to make the type of progress they've made. So gives me a lot of hope.
Do you feel like that is hope that directly applies to the Kansas City school district situation? Do you think anything in particular bodes well for you about that decision?
Yeah, absolutely. It goes back to what I've said all along with learning in these first 100 days, the care and the sincerity that our Board of Education possesses for this school district, what I've learned about the community as a whole and what people believe in terms of funders of what can be done if we all come together and we do some things that are a little bit different, you know, not continuing to maintain the status quo of how we conduct business, that we too will have an opportunity to present our case to the board for full accreditation.
And do you have a sense of when that will happen? What's the timeline that you're hoping for now?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm hoping that we will be able to do the same next year at this time. I mean, that would be our goal. We know that the state is in the process of making some adjustments to the accreditation system that we have in place. And I know that our district, we will do everything in our power, at least in my conversations with the commissioner, to make our case and our argument that we should be considered for full accreditation. But we have to do our part. And the commissioner has made it very clear that you have to be able to demonstrate making this type of progress for consecutive years. And so that's
what they're waiting for. You've met the scores now, but they want to see if you can do it 2 years in a row.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on that, and I'm sure we'll probably have you back in here to talk about that at that point. But in the meantime, you released last month a 22-page report called Moving Forward Together, and it outlined in what I think were really personal terms your assessment of the district as it stands now and many of your plans for it. You know, we all know you walked in the summer to a district that has had a lot of problems, has had some issues, and you wanted to find out what was really going on. How did you go about that?
Yeah. To me, the most important thing, and I shared this with the community and with the board during that third interview at Paseo was that I didn't have any plans of coming into the district to blow up the district and automatically start bringing in my own people and putting in new programs without doing a thorough assessment of the district. So I took the balcony approach. Mm-hmm. And what I did was just, had an opportunity to get out and engage the community, the business sector. I spent a lot of time talking with students, teachers.
Well, yeah, you went into the schools, and I don't know if every superintendent does this, but it sounds like you spent time sitting in cafeterias having lunch.
Absolutely. In fact, last week, I want to say it was either Monday or Tuesday, I went over to Richardson Early Childhood Center and actually sat in those tiny chairs with our 3 and 4 year olds. And
you're not a small man.
I'm not. It was very difficult, but I ate the exact same thing that they ate. In fact, it was pretty good. It was like a calzone. No meat was in it, but it was good. And the marinara in the corn was good. But no, I definitely do a lot of that. In fact, this morning I was at East High School and I gave the entire student body, 1,000 students, a motivational speech. We had all of them in the auditorium, and I spent about an hour with them this morning.
Do you get surprised reactions from students or maybe from teachers and administrators to see the superintendent sort of strolling into their hallways and having that kind of relationship with people?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things a couple of teachers came to me today and said, we've never seen the kids this quiet in an assembly. But I think it was because I told the kids we're going to have a truthful conversation. I'm going to be vulnerable, and kind of similar to what I shared with you when I first started here about my story. Mm-hmm. I shared that with the students, but it was different because I had a few videos in there. I really made it come alive for them, and there were several students who came afterwards and was just saying, you know, Dr. Bedell, I'm living through those things right now. You know, it gives them an opportunity to open up and talk about what they're going through.
And you're talking about growing up in a pretty hard home situation, being homeless for a time.
Correct.
Raised by a grandmother for part of those years, and the teachers having a big impact on your life.
Correct. And so I shared that today. I shared that with teachers. All of the teachers were in there, all of the students. I received the same comments from teachers, too, today about what they learned and what they believe they have to do differently in how they relate with kids. So I think it makes a difference.
Have you had any pushback from this approach? I mean, are there people who say, you know, we're trying to do our job here, or, you know, you got work to do back at the office?
No, because I think the teachers know that if I can come in and help inspire kids, and I talk oftentimes about the control that kids need to have, the respect you need to have for teachers, the respect you need to have for each other, and then the accountability. I talk a lot about that. Like, I don't want us allowing for kids to skate, you know, in terms of taking it easy on them because things are difficult. We recognize that things are difficult, but the way that you overcome that is by making sure that there are high expectations in place. So I think, in essence, it actually supports the work that the teachers are doing when the kids hear directly from me that there are no excuses, right? There are excuses, but there aren't. And you have the power to come into school to make things better by putting forth the effort that's needed in order for you to become great.
Yeah. I found it pretty interesting the way you connected with members of your school board, the elected school board as well. I know you met with them all individually, but you also apparently all went together to an escape room. Is that right?
We did. We went to an escape room activity, and we're all very competitive. I mean, just like I've told people, I play basketball. I'm a sports guy. I am ultra competitive. None of us were able to figure out how to get out of the room. My understanding was the other group said they were further advanced than we were. And I think that's still up for debate.
Okay.
But it was a great opportunity for us to just bond outside of work. And we had my executive team was there, too. So, you know, really trying to get us to merge to really become one unit that everybody can genuinely say KCPS is united. Like, we are together, and it's not the board versus the administration or the administration versus the schools, that we're all together in support of doing what's right for our kids in the community.
Let's talk about some of what you found after that 100 days of talking and listening and trying to make some observations. It's a lengthy report, but in a word, what do you think is the number one challenge facing the district now, in your observation?
Yeah, I would tell you it's this perception. If the perception is just negative, and I think
so it's not the reality, it's how people perceive the district.
It is, because I've learned in this district that there are pockets of excellence throughout, to the point where as I'm going out into the community, I'm telling people, go visit these schools. There are schools that people don't know anything about that are scoring 100% APR points. I mean, an example would be James Elementary. I walked in that school, and I do unannounced visits. I don't tell people, principals, when I'm coming, because I want to see it in its authenticity. And when I went to James Elementary in one of the poorest zip codes in the city, you couldn't tell what was happening within the environment outside of the school. The leadership in that school, the expectations, those teachers, they were phenomenal. So it required that I decided to bring the State Board of Education and the commissioner to visit James Elementary. And they walked out thoroughly impressed. And so I tell people that we have pockets of excellence. I mean, do we have our struggles? Yes, we do, just like any other urban school district. But the entire school district is not a failing school district.
Mm-hmm. Beyond the perception issues, I mean, when you get down to the reality, you say there really are some struggles that are just – that honest to goodness, that's what's going on. What do you think are the bigger struggles? What are the things you've got to fix?
Oh, so one, I would tell you, as you think about our instructional programming, we have to fix that. We have to make sure that we are providing a richer and more culturally relevant curriculum to our kids. We want to make sure that there's rigor and that the curriculum speaks to us having high expectations for our kids. We don't want it to be centered around routines and procedures. And I think that can happen in a lot of school districts. And I know that we're rewriting our curriculum as the state standards continuously shift on us. It gives us an opportunity to do that. But then how do we make sure that we leverage the technology that we have right now? I mean, we're a one-to-one district. How do we ensure that investment, the return on that investment, results in an increased academic performance of our kids? So there's a lot of components there. And then there's another component, Brian, that I'm really concerned about, and that's the human capital piece. Mm-hmm. And so when I say human capital, we're talking about teachers, principals, making sure that we have qualified people with staying power that want to stay in the district. They understand what we're up against, and they are willing to be here, you know, for the fight, for the entire time, you know, not just here for 1 year and then leaving, and then we're constantly having to hire new people.
We're talking with Dr. Mark Bedell. He's the superintendent of the Kansas City Public Schools, joining us today on Up to Date from KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. Dr. Bedell, we're talking about some of the problems you've observed over these 100 days of being intentional about looking at that. I want to talk about some of the solutions that you are specifically advocating for, at least in this first round of observations. One of the things that you outline up front is a different model, or at least a different attitude toward governance in the district. Your report's really clear about the need for the school board to direct its accountability to you and not necessarily to the rest of the staff in the district. Do you think that's been a problem in the past?
Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding from my research and in talking with various individuals here throughout the community. The one thing that I've heard constantly is, how is the board working with you? Is the board allowing for you to do your job? Because apparently in the past, that wasn't the case. Apparently in the past, there was some dysfunction that existed, and it was widely known. And what I'd like to tell people is that I think we've made it very clear to the board that, you know, there are the roles of the board, which is governance, budget setting, policy writing, and then ultimately supervising me. That's the role of the board. Mm-hmm. I've been very fortunate because I do have a very supportive board. And I will tell you that, you know, I'm constantly talking to some of my executive team members that, you know, we're able to do things here with our board that a lot of other school districts don't do. We had a gathering before the holiday break after a board meeting, the board and executive team. We were able to get together. I told other superintendents about that. They said, man, we would never be able to do something like that. So it is different. The relationship is different, but it's because of us creating this level of trust. If I feel that any of our board members are crossing the line, I don't have a problem telling them that, and I don't have a problem with them telling me the same, because that's where the accountability lies. And so that's something that I believe people are telling me is a difference to hear that.
Yeah. I think the other difference that you lift up that you're trying to work for is to make things more student-focused. You use that word over and over. And I guess I want to ask you what that means. I guess I'm surprised that a school could be something other than student-focused. How are they not student-focused at present, and what would that look like?
Yeah, I just think when I go into a school, and anybody should be able to walk into any of our schools, and it should convey a message that pretty much will recruit on its own. And so when I say a student-focused building, that means when you walk in, the culture and the climate of that building speaks to nothing but that this building is about students. And so it's the appearance. It's when you go into classrooms and you're looking at the lesson design, you're looking at instruction, you're looking at kids not necessarily just receiving a routine education, that this is more around a teacher being a facilitator. You know, kids are more so engaged in inquiry-based learning. They're learning in a way that really reaches them where they are. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's not the same. We all learn differently. And so we have to be able to recognize that. But I tell people that I'm a big culture and climate guy. And I think that when people come onto your campus, they should be walking out raving about what they're seeing, that kids aren't running all over the place. That they're, you walk in classrooms, kids' heads aren't down.
You talked about students' work being displayed in the hallways.
And I'm not talking about regular student work, right? I'm not talking about worksheets. I'm talking about authentic work products that students have created. So, where we know that there's some rigor, that there was a way that you were able to open up the concepts and objectives that are being taught to kids in a way that is highly engaging, it's rigorous, but it's relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that when you go into our schools that are doing extremely well, it's kind of spelled out throughout the entire building.
I want to ask our listeners if they want to join this conversation. What do you think needs to be different? If you're a parent in the district, do you see any changes already in the last 6 months that Superintendent Bedell's been on the job? If you're a teacher in the district, well, you should get back to work. But if you're around your phone, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. 88. We'd love to hear from you. Something very much on the minds of many families in the school district right now, I think, is the future of DACA, the so-called Dreamers Act. There's worry about the impact of the incoming Trump administration on children who were brought to the country and are undocumented. Are you hearing from those families, and is the district responding to that?
Yeah, we have. I mean, it was part of the reason why I went over to East today to have that conversation. There's a couple of slides on my presentation that talks about ensuring that anybody that's in our school system, you're part of our family, and it's our job to ensure that you are.
Whether you're documented or not.
Exactly. I mean, we have a lot of immigrants that attend Northeast High School and East High School. And so several of those slides really spoke to that. I mean, I even showed the students a slide that we had presented to the media around us ensuring that, the district would not tolerate any discrimination or anything of that nature as far as us, working with the diverse population that we have.
Well, one of the things that's happening in a couple of weeks, if I understand this correctly, is a pretty unique partnership with the Mexican consulate over
correct.
At East. Is that right? Tell us about that.
That's correct. Yeah, we met with the Mexican consulate back in September, and what we talked about was really wanting to figure out as a district, how can we strengthen our support for our ELL families, our Latino population, and some of our
English as a that's
English language learners
used to call it ESL.
Yeah,
okay.
ELLs.
Right.
Yeah, used
yeah.
to call it ESL,
right,
English
okay.
as a second language, but it's different. Some districts still do ESL.
Okay.
But we wanted to work with the Mexican consulate to get a program up and running over at East High School. And I think we are, I think my understanding is ready to launch at the beginning of February over there, which would allow for us to not only support our students with the resources that they need, but also some of the adults within the community, allowing for people to get certificates that can also be granted from Mexico in order for some of our community members to be able to matriculate to obtain better jobs. And we think that having this program over at East High School is a beginning of that partnership in terms of the supports after school, some of the resources that will be provided to the district in partnership with the Mexican Consulate Office.
And the other change in administration this month is, of course, the one happening in Jefferson City, where Republican Governor Eric Greitens was just inaugurated. One of his primary legislative emphases is education, and he's talked a lot about school choice. He's talked about creating education savings accounts, which a lot of people think is a step toward vouchers that a lot of public school supporters have some problems with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a concern. I've gone on record multiple times telling people that I don't have a problem with school choice. I've said that from day one, and I really don't. But as I've learned over these first 100 days of being in this district, the concern that I have is when we're saturated with seats, right? We're saturated as a city, even with charters. And when you have schools that are 300, 400, 500 students, it's not really much you can offer to those students. And so when you think about the electives, a rich education, that's not readily available in a lot of our schools and even a lot of the charters, because you just don't have the personnel to mm-hmm. offer that rich type of curriculum.
So is that one of your goals? You want to see more electives and a richer curriculum?
I want to see more electives. I want to see that there are more completers, you know, that kids are, you know, if it's foreign language and we're wanting kids to do 2 years of foreign language, if it's more of the career technology education pathways, that's something that we're talking about now. But also, I want our kids to have experiences when they compete in athletics and extracurriculars, that we are fielding teams that could then compete. The way it's set up right now in our city, the powerhouse is Hogan Prep. Well, guess what happens to Hogan Prep when they play in the first round of playoffs? They get knocked out. None of our kids will have that experience of being able to compete in a state championship based on the way that the city is set up, the educational landscape is set up, with the saturation of seats. And so I'm interested in us figuring out how can we all partner together to make sure that we are maximizing the seats that we have instead of continuing to expand, because then we begin to just continue to cannibalize from each other.
Yeah. 816-235-2888 is the number to call to join the conversation with Superintendent Mark Bedell. And Jill is calling from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Jill.
Thank you, Dr. Bedell, for being so open to listening to those citizens of this city. And I have a kindergartner in Kansas City Public Schools.
Okay.
And my concern is primarily that most of the other kindergartens and all the other school districts have more recess than we do in our full day preschool or full day kindergarten. And we know, I mean, there's all kinds of literature about the importance of play, spontaneous play, and how that builds innovation, it builds creativity, it builds those cognitive skills, and yet our children, those children in the poor school districts, are the ones that have less opportunity for that. And I wanted to know if that was going to be addressed in your new curriculum. And I really like what you're talking about with children being learning in different ways. So I just wanted to know if that was going to be addressed.
Appreciate the question, Jill. A question about recess.
Yeah, Jill, I think that's an excellent question, and that's something that I wasn't aware of. I do agree. There's a tremendous amount of research that really does talk about the frequent breaks, and I think over at Border Star, my daughter is in kindergarten at Border Star, and we know that they have many opportunities to get those breaks, and because my daughter comes home and she talks to me about it, she's actually doing extremely well. She's thriving, and it's something that I will 100% take a look at. I just wasn't aware that they weren't getting the recommended amount of recess. And so, yeah, that's a no-brainer. We can definitely talk to our principals about that.
Thanks for the call, Jill. Let's take a call from John in Kansas City. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Bedell, thank you for taking on the task of being the superintendent here in the Kansas City, Missouri school district.
Thank you.
My question is, in your first 100 days that you have now to evaluate the district, what's the incentive that you and your staff will present for recruitment and retention of talented teachers for our district? I'll take my answer offline.
Yeah, it's a great question, John. Dr. Bedell?
That is a great question. I think if you have heard me speak earlier, I talked about the human capital piece, and what we're doing right now is we're working with UMKC to really create a grow your own pipeline. We're in conversation now with UMKC around this program called US Prep that would actually significantly redesign the education preparatory program, for an urban school setting. And so we're working in partnership to do that. We're looking at potentially working with some funders to figure out how we can offer some scholarships, some reduced tuitions potentially for people that we're looking to groom with an MOU, some type of MOU that there will be a commitment to those individuals coming back to our school district upon completion of these preparatory programs to stay. The other piece that we're looking at is we form cohorts where we are wanting to, in order to keep some of our teachers, principals are giving us the names of some teachers that we believe have potential to continuously grow. And we're also, we have several cohorts where we're doing some partnerships with Kauffman, some partnerships with UMKC, where we're actually offering, in some cases, the programs for free. And some of the programs are at a reduced cost where people will be able to move on to get a master's or an educational specialist degree.
So you're not only recruiting new teachers, but you're trying to retain them and develop them as teachers.
Correct. I'm turned off my phone, but I am. I will be at a university tonight. I want to say, I don't know if it's Rockhurst, but we will okay. be. I will be at a university tonight speaking directly to teachers. We've already spoken to teachers over at Park University and then UMKC. And so we're actively going out and recruiting.
Yeah.
And I have one other idea, if it's okay to
quickly
share.
Sure.
I mean, I'm even to the point where I'm interested in even trying to figure out how can we offer affordable housing. Who can we partner with to potentially offer affordable housing for new teachers that we're bringing in? Because if the salaries are not competitive with other school districts, if we can offset that by offering affordable housing for teachers, I think that's another way that we would be able to recruit and potentially retain some strong teachers.
That'd be a pretty innovative deal. I don't think we've ever heard of something like that in Kansas City.
Yeah, so we're definitely having discussion about that.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the cost of living, the cost of surviving as a teacher. I mean, just on a broader scale in terms of money, does the district have the money it needs to do the things you want? You've got a lot of ideas here. Do you have the revenue to support that?
No. Let me just be very honest with you. It's a very difficult situation for us here in Kansas City. A lot of the other surrounding districts don't have to deal with some of the variables that we have to deal with. And when you think about the charters and 42% of our budget is redirected to charters, I mean, we take a significant hit in what we can do. That other school districts don't have to deal with that within the surrounding area.
You mentioned in the report another thing about charters, that one of your challenges from an academic standpoint is that you often have to enroll students who are discharged from charter schools.
That's correct.
Sounds like you're not very high on charters.
No, Listen, I've been very clear. I started visiting charters this year. I've already I've visited one, and I have another one scheduled within the next 2 weeks. I've told the commissioner this, and I will tell all the charter leaders this. I just want a level playing field. You know, that's the main thing. In Texas, there is a level playing field with charters. And the accountability, how kids are enrolled, withdrawn, it's pretty much the same across the board. When I have 469 kids, that was as of December, that have been removed out of charters. And then they are coming into some of our schools, and we have issues with you know, some of the safety within our schools, yeah, that's a major concern of mine.
Yeah.
It's a major concern.
It's just a little bit of time we have left here, Dr. Bedell. I guess I want to ask a question about style. Your report is, this 22-page report, which is online, people can find it, is written in the first person. It's got a lot of substance, but it's also very personal. It's the things you've seen, the things you want to see. Is that intentional? Are you trying to set a particular kind of tone with that?
I am. I am a very personable person, and I think you all have learned that by now. I'm very transparent, and I tell people, it's kind of similar to when I wrote my dissertation. Like, I tell people, I wrote that dissertation, right? I put in a lot of work in terms of the ideals and what I wanted to have in there and the style. I do have a different style, and so I believe in storytelling, and I think if you look at this 100-day post-entry plan, it comes from the lens of telling stories. I use different scenarios as analogies to really get my point across, and that's just my style. So even when I write to principals every week, to the entire staff, they get a copy of everything that I do every Monday. And I write a personal letter.
And it's going to be you.
Yes, and it goes directly to the entire staff.
It's Dr. Mark Bedell, superintendent of the Kansas City Public Schools. Thanks for telling a little of that story again to us today.
Thank you.
When we come back, a conversation with jazz legend Ramsey Lewis. At 81, he is still doing new work, like what we're going to hear now. He'll be bringing some of it to Kansas City this weekend to commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll have that in a minute on Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. Welcome back to KCUR's Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. On the program yesterday, we learned about the peace protests that almost kept the U.S. out of World War I. You can listen to that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, a doctor-turned-journalist helps us understand the inner workings of the human body. Plus, we learn about the young women, about the young women in Kansas City who were pushing for rights decades before women's suffrage. That's coming up tomorrow. But today, Ramsey Lewis. He is a legend of the Chicago jazz scene, from his classic Sun Goddess album to songs like Living in the City, which we just heard. Lewis has been defining jazz piano for the last half century with more than 80 albums and 3 Grammys. And now, at age 81, he's bringing his distinctive sound to Kansas City again, performing this weekend at the Gem Theater in a concert that's part of events honoring Martin Luther King Jr. there. He joins us by phone from Chicago this morning. Mr. Lewis, it's an honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Brian. How are you today?
Doing well. So that song we just heard is from one of your latest albums. You've been doing this for a while. How's the music of Ramsey Lewis today different from when you got started?
Well, it develops, hopefully, and keeps growing, although I've been around for a couple of years or more. You hope that life's experiences, life's experiences are like food, if you will, that feeds your very being, the experiences do, and helps you grow. And that, in turn, shows itself in your creative work, whatever your creative work might be. Mine just happens to be music and piano.
How have your life experiences shaped your music as the years have gone by?
Well, when good things happen, maybe there's a little more positive expression in the music. But when things that I interpret as not being so good happen, then maybe there's a little dark notes in the music. Hmm. But what's interesting is, as time heals all wounds, because as time goes by and you look back at the couple days that you thought, oh, woe is me, and life teaches you, well, that wasn't so bad after all, was
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, that wasn't so bad after all. Matter of fact, life says, you learned a couple things, didn't you? Well, darn if I didn't learn a couple things.
I want to go back and take a little listen to the sound from, oh gosh, half a century ago, hard to believe. And we can keep talking as we listen. But here's a little bit of the Ramsey Lewis Trio playing The In Crowd back in 1965. Ramsey Lewis, what's it like to listen back to your classic work?
Well, as you started playing it, we recorded three nights, and every time we started playing, then we played it once a night while recording, and every time we played it, people started clapping their hands, and some of them were up on their feet, and they were smiling, and what was interesting about recording was the place, Bohemian Caverns in Washington, D.C., at that time was the home of hard boppers. I mean, not Miles Davis, but people of his ilk played there. And we were one of the unusual groups that they brought in just to see what these young guys could do. And we came in not knowing how people were going to react to our music. So when these very serious jazz guys and lady with their chins on their hands, and we started playing this, and they cut loose, we looked at each other and started grinning, and it was really a wonderful experience.
I read a great story about how you decided to perform this song in the first place. It wasn't what you planned on, but until the day of the show, right?
That's right. We were looking for a song and something that was a little more up-tempo, something a little more happy, because we had our so-called hardcore jazz tunes, and we were in a coffee shop, and a lady, I'll never forget her name, Nettie Gray, said, there's a tune on the jukebox. That's when they had coffee shops, they had jukeboxes.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
And she played Dobie Gray's The In Crowd, and L.D. Young, the bass player, Red Holt, the drummer, he and I looked, we looked at each other. They had heard that song. I hadn't heard it. So we said, yeah, you know, that'll do. We've got the meat of the album. We just want a fun song.
So this is what you sounded like playing the song after hearing it for the first time that day, or maybe the day before.
Yeah, the day before. We went back and listened to it some more. We didn't have a chance to rehearse it, really. I think we went in early to where we were performing and went over it a couple of times. But, no, there wasn't a down-and-out rehearsal like, well, you play this, you play that.
Well, and, it turned out pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I want to talk about this event you're coming to Kansas City for this weekend. You're performing at the Gem Theater at 18th and Vine Saturday night at 8 o'clock. They have concert jazz at the Gem there fairly often, but this is a pretty special concert sponsored by Southern Christian Leadership Council of Kansas City as part of their Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. festivities. Can you talk about how the music this weekend will be honoring Dr. King?
Well, everything that I do honors Dr. King and what he represents. I got to meet him once or twice briefly. I wasn't part of the big marches. I don't know what happened that I was doing during those big marches. But after meeting him briefly and then, of course, reading and watching him on television and staying up to date with everything he did, he remains with me. And he remains with everything that happens here in the United States. He was a wonderful person, a person bigger than life, and being that he brought such wonderful ideas and the love of truth to our country, I think there's nothing, or nobody rather, that can't understand and respect what Martin Luther King was about and what he brought to our country.
Mm-hmm. What's some of what we should look forward to in this concert?
Well, I'm going to feature the guys in the band, Henry Johnson on guitar and Joshua Ramos on bass, and I'm going to play some of the songs that were familiar, like The In Crowd, Wade in the Water, Sun Goddess, but I'm going to play some new stuff, too, some stuff that people haven't heard before. You got to keep your show interesting, you know.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think a lot of people, you're doing this concert to honor Dr. King. A lot of people would say we're at a pretty interesting time in our life and culture as a nation right now. Do you think music, maybe jazz especially, has a role to play right now that is unique or important?
Well, you know, I think we're at a juncture in the history of our country where everybody's got to look at themselves. You know, it's too much of a separation in our country, and music has a tendency to bring people together, no doubt about it. Whether it's brought together in a concert hall or or festivals or whatever. But at the same time, I think it's time that people take a hard look at what we're doing to our country. I mean, watching television these days and looking at the news, there's such separation there. And music can do all it can do, hopefully bringing us together. But it comes to the point where it's a personal desire, a personal effort to maintain who and what you believe in, but at the same time not step on the toes of what other people believe in.
It's the legendary Ramsey Lewis. He's performing this Saturday night at the Gem Theater at 8 o'clock. Tickets are available through the American Jazz Museum. Ramsey Lewis, thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us today.
I've enjoyed it. Look forward to seeing you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much. Coming up, our weekend to-do list.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Well, I'd buy you a house.
I would buy you a house.
And if I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Buy you furniture for your house.
Maybe an ice chest.
KCUR contributor Brian McTavish is here with us. We pay him $1 million each week to come and share his ideas for your weekend. Brian, did you get the check this week?
Shh.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's off the... Never mind.
That's a shush.
Apologize.
Yeah, that's not supposed to be for public consumption, but there it is. I guess everybody knows now.
I'm sorry. Well, now that we've told them, we should might as well tell them what to do this weekend.
Hey, if they pay me $1 million, what are they paying you?
Well, that's off the record this week.
Okay, well, fans of Bare Naked Ladies, they know that we're listening to that very fine Canadian band. If you had $1 million.
Yes.
What would you do with it? Who would you give it to? What might you do with that $1 million?
You know, I'd probably just hand it over to you, Brian. I feel like you could handle it best.
And then, you know what I would do?
What would you do?
I think I would try to... what the heck? I'd give it all to try to cure breast cancer.
Oh, well, now, see, that makes you seem like a better person than me.
Well, it is a competition at every turning point.
But you actually can help cure breast cancer. Is that right?
That's absolutely weekend? Yes, you can. Just buy a ticket to Rock the Ribbon 2. That's the big show featuring Bare Naked Ladies, a benefit show for the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Organization, 8:30 Friday night at the Arvest Bank Theater at the Midland.
I'm really enjoying that the Bare Naked Ladies are performing at this
they
concert.
Are.
Just seems right.
They're liars. They are trying to do the right thing on behalf of the right cause. In addition to If I Had $1 million, there's an awfully good shot you'll also get on the Rock and Docket 1 week. That's their biggest hit. The Old Apartment and Pinch Me. And also, I hope they play Brian Wilson, their ode to the Beach Boys' genius. Friday night, Arvest Bank, Do the Right Thing. Check it out.
Check it out.
I would rather have it fall apart than act like we're on solid ground. I would rather have to watch you go and keep you here when you don't know what you meant by the...
I like that, Brian.
That's called Take It Back. That's by Liza Ann. She's a very young, early 20s tops, indie folk popster based in Nashville these days. 8 o'clock Saturday night at the Tank Room. Take It Back. Did you ever have to take anything back? Other than the $1 million you just gave me.
Once it's there, it's there, you know?
Well, anyway, this song is about, you know, the guy in her life has said something or done something, and he tries to take it back, or perhaps he doesn't, or he should, and
can't really be done.
She's musing on it, but you can try to make it right.
Yes,
you can't take it back, but you can try to make it right. She's only been around for a few years in terms of her career. She actually put out her first record at age 19. It was called The Colder Months.
Do I know her from anything?
No, I bet you don't.
The voice sounds like something that accompanies a primetime drama.
Well, she probably liked that. Her agent would love that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's how a lot of these young artists get established. They get on the television or what have you.
Right.
And the next thing you know, hey, they got a hit record or something.
Grey's Anatomy or something.
Absolutely. Excellent example. She has a forthcoming release this year called Fine But Dying, so she's not necessarily upbeat, but she is interesting.
Now, someone else who doesn't want to die is a comedian on stage, right?
Oh, good one, yeah. Thanks. Well, she's all about killing people and killing it on stage. We're talking about Lisa Lampanelli, really best known probably by her nickname of the Queen of Mean.
Queen of Mean.
The Queen of Mean. That's a great one, isn't it? She's an insult comic.
Mm-hmm.
Think Don Rickles in an estrogen bath. Actually,
I'm not thinking. No, I can't unthink it.
No, don't do it. Right. But you can try to make it right.
Yeah,
so
right.
Here we go. 8 o'clock, Saturday night, Uptown Theater, Lisa Lampanelli. Let's listen to her talk a little bit about the yoga thing. Maybe a yoga retreat.
It would be so relaxing to listen,
ooh,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
See, I believe in all that stuff. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. I like all the sayings, you know? Because I work on myself. I've been doing very intense work on myself. In fact, a couple weeks ago, I went on this 7-day yoga retreat. And get this, I don't do yoga. I don't even know what the f*** yoga is. I thought it was a frozen yogurt retreat. Now, I can tell you honestly, after 7 days of boring hell watching these fat b****s who just wanted a place to go for a week that they didn't have to put a zipper on their f***ing pants.
Well.
I did not listen to the clip before we played it. Man.
You know what? I did not either. I actually selected another clip, which I think was probably dirtier than this one.
Even more obscene, yes.
Yeah, even wronger. But here's the thing. As you can tell from the clip and the bleeps, she's got a mouth on her, right? And she has shown it as a roaster at these crazy roasts of lots of celebrities, including Donald Trump. Who knows what she had to say about the Donald.
And I bet she won't be doing that again.
Check it out, 8 o'clock Saturday. Be prepared. She'll let loose. She'll let it go.
Don't forget to be sure to see Brian's 6 non-Chiefs things to do in Kansas City this weekend at kcur.org.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get
Let's sing it together, Brian.
Okay, let's go.
On the road again.
Why are we singing
I can't
on the road
wait
again
to get on the road again.
I wish we had more time, but I have to cut you off.
Well, I think you need to cut me off.
That's
really
you
what
off.
You meant to say. Anyway,
Willie Nelson is not coming to town.
You can sing it, no. He's in my head singing that song now for the rest of the day. And all weekend at the Mid-America RV Show. It's RVs. It's RV lifestyle. It's RV envy. It's at Bartle Hall. Look, only a certain amount of the population has the moolah and the desire to buy an RV, a big, gigantic mobile home, right?
Right.
And God bless them. I'm not one of those guys, but I am one of those guys who wants to go and gawk and dream and walk through these things and just think, what would that be like to be in this RV with Willie? I think I know the answer. I think I should stop talking.
I think you should too. Let's just go to Bartle Hall and take care of that.
Do it.
And finally,
we're going to wrap it up. We're going to wrap it up with the Casey Donahue Band. He plays good old time, but yet brand new country. It starts tonight. I like to get the weekend going early, 8 o'clock tonight. Where else but the Uptown Theater, where country is king, at least tonight. He's a Texas guy. He sings about broken beer bottles and broken hearts. And here's a quote. He says, once you get your heart broken for the first time, you've got a lot to say, I guess.
8 o'clock tonight at the Uptown.
That's right.
The incomparable Brian McTavish, who writes about pop culture and joins us every week with plans for your weekend.
We got to get a Brian and Brian act going outside of this thing.
This is the best it can get, I'm afraid.
Oh, I'm afraid you're right.
Hey, you can listen to previous programs and download our podcast at kcur.org/uptodate. Follow KCUR on Facebook, and also we're on Twitter at @KCURUptodate. I'm at PTS Brian. Join us tomorrow and find out what our bodies could say about our health if they could talk to us. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Tatacoro. It's been good being with you the last couple of weeks. Ellie Moxley will be in this chair tomorrow. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.
I ain't stopping till I see the sun. We ain't stopping till we see the sun.